Welcome to episode 219 of Redboard Rewind. My name is Spencer Luganbuehl, and today my special guest is friend of the podcast, friend of In the Money, co-owner of 10 Strike Racing. It's Clay Sanders. Me and Clay go over three races from this past Saturday at Oaklawn Park. Those races were 3, 5, and 7, and some angles that we talk about are why I like the dropper from the Carl Broberg barn. Also, we talk about the two $100 horses on the other part of the card. This is Red Border Rewind. It's the same old story in this tugboat. We go back and forth. We go back and forth. It ain't good for me what we do this for. We go back and forth. Won't do this no more. All we want, always have to sell it. All we want, always have to sell it. And now I'd like to welcome in my special guest for this week's edition of Red Board Rewind. If we're going to be talking Oaklawn, there's only one person I'm going to be talking to. That's Clay Sanders. Clay, how are you?
I'm doing great, Spencer. It was a good weekend racing and did pretty good at the window. So happy to talk about it.
First off, congrats. Not playing Oaklawn this week. You're playing more of a Keeneland-style tournament, that being the Grade 1 Gamble, and you finished with a top three finish there. Congratulations with that.
Thank you. It was a good tournament. I was at Oaklawn on Friday, and I had to get back to we had a party for our partners on Friday night. I had to get back to Memphis to take care of my daughter on Saturday, and so the Grade 1 Gamble is always, you know, it's a major in the horse tournament world, and I still wanted to play it, so I was playing it. Had to pull over a couple exits to put some bets in, and got back about mid card, but. You know, a lot of people, they want to grind through these tournaments and play every race. And, you know, you have to play as few races as possible, not let the churn get you. So I was playing a couple show bets just to preserve bankroll. And I really had two opinions and parlayed Philly. I really like Roses for Deborah in the turf sprint. And then there was a Bill Mott horse in a nightcap that was a prank hole that was going to like the softer turf, was getting back to lay six, and basically just parlayed my bankroll on those two horses and got took 2,500 to 27.5. So it was a pretty good day.
Also helps. It's live money, right? So you also keep the winnings plus what you have in the bankroll, right?
Yeah, it was 27.5 at live bank, and I think first place was 68, second place was 34, and then they throw in a BCBC and an NHC, so ended up being a pretty solid haul.
I always, and this is something that's just great about playing tournaments in general and playing, you know, paramutually, you talk about you only had two opinions on the card. It's hard enough to line up five opinions a la pick fives and stuff like that. I know you like to play those type of wagers. But for the beginning handicap or even the intermediate person or someone who's struggling and just, you know, blowing through their bankroll, if you have a 10 race card, if you can find three solid A++ spots, you're probably doing it right if you're winning. I think where a lot of what happens with other players is they try to play pick threes into that spot, or they try and play, you know, they'll single that in a pick five, but the other four are nowhere near the proper opinions of what you would have to play that, you know, type of sequence. And if you have three good opinions on the card and you're playing win bets and you're hitting, you know, as long as the odds are right and you're hitting a decent percentage, it's going to be hard for the bankroll to go down. I think that the hardest part in gambling in general, and this is with table games, poker, any type of gambling game, is everyone gets bored and they start playing more than they should.
100%, Spencer. I mean, I'm a seasoned player, been playing my whole life. I'm guilty of this as anybody. And, you know, I was at the races. I did not have a great day on Friday at Oaklawn, and a lot of it was playing races that I shouldn't have been playing. And it's just hard when you're sitting there. It's a little easier. It's a little easier when you're not there in person, because I don't know if you're like me, but when I'm at the races, I need to have some money on it. But what I would encourage people is just size your bets appropriately. If you don't really have an opinion, if it's an action play, I mean, there's nothing wrong with playing a $2, $4, $6 bet. And then when you have a stronger opinion, you know, really hammer it. So, but it's hard.
I always have these friends who they're like, man, I'm going to play, you know, a $50 win bet, but then they're also playing $40 pick fives. And I'm like, the math isn't mathing when you're playing, you know, 80% of what your prime real estate bet is, and then you're playing it on four other sequences of the card. And maybe you have, like, I always tell people, and it might sound stupid, but use the confidence level, you know, start at 10 with your best bets and then slowly go down. And everyone's like, well, that's stupid, because then you're hemming and hawing on if a race is a 7 or a 6. If at least it's that, then just write 6 or 7. It doesn't have to be foolproof to where you're getting that right or wrong. It's, oh, there's a maiden special. Wait, I have no idea. Well, okay. That means the pick 4s and pick 5s are usually dead to you. Maybe you'll play a double or a pick 3 if that's not affecting it. And it will start to help you move about the card in the proper way to, okay, I should not put any money. If it's, like I said, $50 is a you know, spot or a major wager for you, I can't put more than $5 on a, you know, 1 or 2% play. Nor should you want to if you don't have a good opinion to begin with.
Absolutely. I mean, that's just the hard part of maturing as a horse player, is sizing your bets, being able to, you know, not play races that you're not supposed to be, and, you know, just sizing your bets appropriately. And look, even, I'm friends with a lot of the most, you know, top handicappers, and everyone struggles with it. So, I mean, it's just something you have to work on.
I think my first few years, and I'll never forget, like, being able to buy the form, and there's not a lot of places that sell the form around me anymore, was the worst thing for me, because then I had the PPs to all the races. Now the fact that I, you know, have Formulator, I can pick a few tracks, I'm not trying to buy the newspaper stuff through the PDFs and stuff like that. Okay, I'm going to have 2 tracks a day. That's what I'm going to play. And I can just go through there. Whereas, you know, I would go in on a Monday and I'd be playing Parks and Louisiana Downs. And, like, it's just those type of days. I feel like something clicked for me 1 year in Saratoga, where if I just didn't like a race, I'd either just take a lap around Saratoga because, A, it's beautiful, and B, there's just enough stuff to do. And when I started to hang out with Pete more often, I would be meeting so many new, interesting people. I just have conversations with people, and if I didn't have an opinion in that race, you know, I'd go get a beer. Or the thing that I thought helped me the best is if I knew I was going to play multiple days in a row, and let's say I was up on a Saturday, I'd have Sunday's PPs, and I'd just start Sunday's PPs. A, because it saves me time later in the night when I get home, when I'm exhausted from Saratoga being at the track for a day, because it's 1.5-hour drive home. Then I have the early pick 5 done, and I can start focusing on the later races. Instead of coming home and just being like, oh man, race 1 through 13, and it's a big card. That was always so daunting to me. So I always tell people, just, if you don't have an opinion in the race, have something to do. Have one of those good old iPhone, you know, tablet games where they're just, you know, idle simulators where you just, you know, press a button and just get through it. I know it's tough for everybody. Listen, I played poker growing up, and everyone plays too many hands in poker as well. If you can kind of beat that vice of the game, you're ahead of so many people.
Oh, absolutely. No, absolutely. That's great advice.
Let's talk real quick before we get into the races. Not many race cards have $200 winners on it. This card did. Let's kind of bring it up real quick. Race number 4 was, again, another maiden claimer, and this is why everyone, you know, I think is afraid to play maiden claimers, because they'll remember this $100 horse, but not the next 9 or 10 gettable horses, you know, between $8 and $15 or $6 and $15. Kind of give me your thoughts on what you thought of the favorite in that race and just overall the winner.
So the winner, you know, is trained by Tammy Hornsby. Mm-hmm. She's a, you know, mainly focuses on these Archibred races. This was actually a Kentucky bred, if I'm not mistaken. She's just a kind of a real tricky trainer. Not a trainer that I would, you know, have a lot of confidence betting her horses, but she's more capable than probably the percentages give her credit for. She, you know, a good horsewoman. You know, these route races, so the biases at Oakland, the speed continues on the route, on the sprints, to really dominate. You need to be forward. But in these routes, you can have horses that can come off of it. This horse, this gelding, you know, looked to be coming from off of it. You know, I mean, I'd be lying if I said I came up with this horse. You know, you had a decent rider upgrade. I think Zimmerman is one of the worst jockeys on the grounds. You get Saez. That's probably that, and a decent trainer, and that's going to be getting maybe a decent setup is about the only thing. But, I mean, the reality, you know, this horse is 15-1 on the line, you know, splits up to 50. you know, if you're paying attention, you know, sometimes you see some of these horses, you know, maybe that piques your interest. But, you know, I, you know, there wasn't anything that would, you know, made me jump up and down. I wanted to play that horse, but it was not impossible.
I think too, and there's just, you know, not small ideas. And listen, because as soon as you start looking for $100 horses, it's almost impossible to start playing the better, the shorter prices that are probably more logical. But I mean, 4 for 5 at the distance, that's fine. This horse does have, you know, if you look back and it's a 67 for the buyer par on the lower end of it, you want some a horse that's going to run in the 30s. This horse had some mid 60s there that works out. I just think
sticking off a layoff.
I just think when you look at it as well, and everyone goes, oh man, this horse won. It won by a neck over the favorite, the Heights, which is a 3-to-1 shot. I mean, just sometimes you will get nipped at the wire by these horses. And I think overall, the idea of me wanting to talk about these two races is, if you're playing pick fours and pick fives, this sucks. This sucks hugely because 9 times out of 10, you're probably going to have that favorite.
Yeah.
These are the ones where if you're overplaying bankroll and it kind of goes, you know, back into playing too many races, this is the race that if you're not playing the set, you know, whatever. For me, for sports gambling, it's 3-5% of my bankroll, or I'm trying to play, you know, just a standard, you know, across the board is $6 for $2. If you're not, if you're playing high limits and you have a horse like this and you're, you know, that's the race where you try to hammer, you lose. And that's just kind of, you know, if you're using proper bankroll management, you will have other ways to attack the card and just be able to have money not get blown up by this horse that, listen, $100 horse hard to come by, won by a neck. You get unlucky in this kind of game. Let's move on to the last one, race number 12, another maiden special. Another maiden claiming this one state bred, so a little bit weaker. Yeah. Thoughts on the winner, just thoughts on the favorite. If you thought this one kind of the same idea,
so this one I think I could have gotten to. So this horse was against last time, was on a dead rail, especially on the last part of the race. So that was one thing. And this Shea Stewart, who I actually know personally, he's a more capable trainer than people give him credit for, similar to Tammy Hornsby. He's actually won some nice allowance races this meet. He doesn't have any owners. He doesn't get much stock, but he is very capable. And, you know, they were taking the blinkers off. You know, in hindsight, you know, I wouldn't necessarily have thought that the blinkers off would make this horse go to the lead, but you know, they were in the one hole. Juarez is a good jock. And basically, you know, they probably felt that was their only way to get there was to go to the lead. And, you know, it was a speed favoring track, at least on the sprints. Wasn't crazy to get to this $100 horse.
I think as well as you look at it, you know, the rail, the horse has never been on the rail. Now we go way inside where you've already said, you know, speed, it favors horses in these sprint races compared to the route race we just talked about. And the fact that the 4-to-5 shot ran off the board. So when a lot of money goes through horses and they just don't run well, listen, this one won by half a length against, you know, a bug jockey and Asmussen with a 5-to-1 shot. It's not like these horses are winning by 2 and 3 lengths. They're just running better than they're supposed to. And we have a 46 and a 34. And I think a lot of beginner handicappers, they think, oh, blinkers on, they're going to fix the problem. And a lot of times blinkers on, they're trying to get through the problem. And it's not until blinkers coming back off tells you, oh, the problem's fixed. The horse should give an improved performance. And listen, I mean, this horse ran a 56 buyer. There's not much in this field that's supposed to get the job done. Time and Time Beyond, if you look at it, ran a 62 last time. And now is dropping in class and obviously doesn't get the job done. But there wasn't much else in the race. Great Barrier ran a 56 last time. Just couldn't get back to it this time. There's no one else in the field above a 50. So, I mean, if you have a spot like this, you get a clear inner rail idea. Take some time, and this is why I think my show, and it's just so important. If people look back through the races, you know, oh, I had zero opinion in this race. It was a 2-confidence race, but a $100 horse won. Good. We're not trying to get you to hit every $100 horse. We're trying to help you find the most logical horses. The James Quinn books say, if you can hit 30% of 5-to-2 or higher, you make a 10%, you know, profit. That's the goal. That's been the goal for me, at least my entire life. I try to find 5-to-2 and higher, 3 out of 10 races, and I go from there.
Yeah, that's a great strategy. And I mean, you're right. This horse wasn't impossible. you know, and you had a big jockey upgrade. I don't like this bug, Belmere. Mm-hmm. Juarez, very, I mean, I think he's one of the top three or four jockeys on. He's not getting that type of mounts, but I think he's one of the top three or four jockeys at Oakland. And, you know, he freaking knew what to do here. He sent this horse to the lead, and then it was bye-bye, $100 horse.
Let's jump into the first of our three races. We promise we won't bore anybody else with these $100 horses talk. We're going to talk with race number three at Oakland Park. Open 8,000 clamor, 6 furlongs on the dirt. Clay, obviously, you're a part-time owner. They don't get lower than 8,000, I believe, for open. Is this kind of the bottom of the barrel here when it comes to Oaklawn?
It is the bottom of the barrel. And, you know, people, because it's the bottom of the barrel on price, but these open eights, you know, this doesn't have any, like, non-winners of in 6 months, non-winners in a year, two life, three life. These bottom of the barrel open claimers, these are your hard-knocking horses that, you know, I mean, look at these buyers. They can run some decent figures. A couple of them have some 80s on the sheet. These horses can run a little bit. You know, like I said, you know, speed has been good at Oakland in the sprint races. And obviously, we're going 6 here, so you have to be real cognizant of being forward. And obviously, you also have, you know, want to look at, you know, who's taking the money. And so on the outside, you had this State and Flurry from Flurry Racing, who's trying to get the owner's title. We'll talk about him later on the big dropper. But so this horse, you know, they claim for 10 and have it back in for 8. One last time at a 10 non-winners in a year. But so you would think, people looking at this race, that this is a drop from 10 to 8. But this is actually a subtle rise because he's facing these open horses here. He got an easy lead last time. And, you know, rolled at, you know, 20, you know, 40 cents on the dollar. But in my opinion, he wasn't going to get the easy lead on Saturday. Now, outside speed is always dangerous. This horse is very usable, you know, if he's in there over that 5-2, but you're looking at a horse that's 3-2. So, you know, like I said, the way the track is playing, this horse is definitely figures. But at that price, with the subtle rise, I was trying to beat this horse. I basically had it narrowed down to the other horses I thought were going to be forward in the 7. Raymond looked like was going to be dueling with the 6. Smoking Hot. They both on the time form 107 and 110. They were what 3-2, 3.2-1 and 4-1. And then the other horse, Love to Win. You know, Carl Broberg's a 4 horse that, you know, looked to be sit right behind it. Had run poorly last time and got claimed off Norm McKnight, but this horse, 2 back, ran an 80 in a really tough starter race at Oakland, so had already proven that it can run on dirt, had been coming from Woodbine. And, you know, Carl Broberg, you know, claims these horses and drops them, and, you know, with the purse being 30,000, that really didn't scare me that much. So I basically, in my pick, used those 3, the 4, 6, and 7.
And I love the fact that you brought up with the favorite, how important it is that you think that it's a class drop from 10 to 8. And the idea I've always used, and if you've listened to, you know, how many ever episodes, we're on 219 now of this show, if there is a clause in the claiming idea, whether it's non-winners 2, non-winners of a year, 6 months, whatever, cut that claiming price in half. So my idea was that the horse really kind of ran for 5, and now it's a steady bump up to 8. And it's so hard for me to, like, with DRF, because sometimes you'll just be 20,000 with a B for beaten claimer next to it. You need to go in to result charts, and that's why Formulator is great with the notes. And if there is a beaten claimer on my PPs, it has exactly what the idea was and what I think that the new claiming price should be. It helps me handicap so much faster. It helps me with classes and dropping so much. I thought your idea with Love to Win, and this, again, comes from just years and years of experience. Carl Broberg, if you read a handicapping book, claiming for 20 and dropping to 8 is a no-no. He's probably about one of 5 trainers where I don't care if he drops them into oblivion. He claimed this one for 20. He puts it in for 8. It's not a negative for me. They're just trying to find the spot this horse can win. They're not. I think that he knows, claiming it off of a 30, this horse is not supposed to be super susceptible anywhere else. He puts them in the bottom. There's going to be forwardly placed. Let's see what this one can do. I think we have a negative favorite here. And your other 2 as well. Raymond, I just didn't know what to do with Timothy Martin. Listen, just 3%, 3 for 110. That's hard for me to do, especially a 3-1 on the morning line. I'm willing to pass on him and get a much better price on a Love to Win horse that I think everyone sees at 30 and runs away. There's an 80 right behind you if you could just forgive that last start.
Well, that's right. No, that's, I mean, that, I agree 100%.
Raymond, smoking hot, Love to Win for my man Clay. I'm going to try to get Love to Win across the line. A little bit of a consensus pick here in the third Oaklawn. Let's see if that one can get it done. Right now,
Laroff, Love to Win, wins the start, broke very alertly and is sent for speed. He's got a narrow lead in the early stages. Smoking Hot on the outside coming up to apply the heat. Raymond runs in the third position, about two off the pace with Starburst. Another 2.5 to Tiger Dad. Get Back Goldie next in the field with Full Authority, the favorite on the outside. Square deal between that pair. Otis is the trailer with a half mile to go. Love to Win is first, quickens the pace here and hits the fourth turn, a length and a half in front. Smoking Hot couldn't keep up, his back in second in chase mode. Starburst to the inside. A gap of two to Raymond. Fourth now. He's 5 ahead of Tiger Dad all in. Full Authority needs to turn it around, and at the moment he's just plodding in midfield as they hit the quarter pole. Love to Win still clear. A length clear of Smoking Hot in the second position. Raymond is underway on the grandstand side. He's charging fast. Smoking Hot, Raymond after Love to Win with a furlong remaining. Love to Win needs to find more. He is. Smoking Hot is second. Raymond outside, flattening out a little bit. Love to Win, 16th to go under the left-handed encouragement. Opens up two, and Love to Win on the class drop. First off the claim for Carl Brope.
And Love to Win does get the job done by 2.25 length. $17 the winning mutual, $80 the winning buyer. Runs right back to that race two back. Listen, sometimes with horses like this, if you're willing to forgive, especially in the claiming level, which you should, you can get rewarded nicely here. And I think I wrote right in my notes here for just the price is what made this horse available here and the fact that I didn't like the favorite.
No, that's great. And your point on Broberg, I should probably pay even more attention to that. He's really not a horseman. He's a handicapper. So he's really savvy with these drops. You know, maybe there was something small physical. They didn't want to own this horse for the long run. But, you know, he snaps right back and takes probably what they thought might be a losing trade into a winning trade by dropping, getting the purse, and moving on.
Just looking right now, was claimed by the Martin Brothers trainer, Martin Williams. So, listen, they claim they probably didn't make back the full, I mean, $30,000 for the winner. Listen, got back the claim, yep. plus the claim for it for $8,000. I mean, I just feel like in the claiming game, when you can figure out, like, listen, the claiming trainers are not all Chad Brown, but when you can find the guys, Orlando Noda for Naira was one for a long time for me, that he would just make these savvy moves, and I could just tell when he was dropping a horse into a weird spot that it was more, I'm going to make $5,000 on this horse now if I get claimed and if I can hit the board, and that's good enough for me. And that's how the claiming barns stay upright. They're not going to win the allowances in the grade one and the grade twos anymore. They have to figure out these 5-2%, you know, ideas to make a horse, make them some money in any way possible.
Right. And, you know, everyone thinks when you claim that you're going to, you know, walk this, the horses all the way up the ladder. But, you know, in this situation, they claim for 20, they lose it for 8, but they pick up the purse. Then what do they pick up? 18,000. So they get 24 back. They had a month of training. So you're right. They probably break even. But they also got to be in the winner's circle, you know, on Apple Blossom Day at Oakland. To some people, that's probably a big win.
And I think for people who, even if you're a handicapper, but you've never owned a horse, listen, I've never owned a horse, but I know enough people who have. And I understand that, you know, first of all, if the horse goes away out of the barn and goes away for a few months, you're still paying fees on top of that. So a lot of times the big angle for me is if a horse wins immediately and then goes away for 4 or 5 months, that's a big negative for me when they come back, because you're still, like, you're not making any money that way. And I think when people, the way I've started to handicap even more now is I start with the maiden levels. I go to claiming, the allowances, and the stakes. And if I realize I can stay in the claiming races for 4 or 5 races back to back, instead of trying to, you know, juxtaposition all my different ideas into an allowance race, and I really get in the heads of the trainers, I find that I'm just a lot better in claiming races that way. Instead of going, you know, oh, it's a maiden in race one, but then a stake race in race two. Just let me get all the class levels out in order, And I feel like I have a much better idea on the card.
That's a great way of doing it. I haven't thought about it that way, but I'm impressed by that.
Let's move on to race number 5 from Oakland Park. It is a 25,000 non-wears two lifetime going 1 1/16 miles on the dirt. So for the idea that I just kind of talked about, I'm looking at this race as kind of a 12,000 type of race. I wanted to try to beat this favorite Interlock Empire. Came on the turf last time out, didn't run all that well. If you look way back when, the maiden race was, you know, back in 2023 as a 3-year-old. Then they go in the Arkansas Derby, no good. First time in for a claim, positive. But closers going as favorites in races like this are just not the most fun for me. I want to have, you know, more money. I just want to have a higher win threshold when it comes to closers. So I'm really trying not to play closers, you know, 3-1, 4-1 or higher. I want to make $10 on a closer. I decided to go elsewhere. I thought the Luca, the 5, was just a little interesting. Coming off that win last time out, these maiden 30s, you want to find horses that are in form, that have, you know, decent or enough running lines. Listen, the 73 last time out, it's not the fastest figure, but it just made sense to me. The win last time out percentage for Cipriano, 18% with a positive ROI, I'll take that. I thought Calrissian, the 7, was another interesting one. If you look back, ran for 16,000. That's like an $8,000 race. So they are jumping this one in class. They're taking it off of Broberg, which is a little bit scary. And the first off the claim numbers are terrible, 3% off of a 31 race sample size. Again, for me, this one was more of a price play. And if you look back at the last three, this one had been claimed twice in 3 races. Usually when I see horses in claiming races that are being claimed race in, race out, other trainers know what they're looking at and like this horse in that way. So I kind of wanted to go with the 5 and the 7 here to try and get the job done. What about you, Clay?
All right, so there's a lot to talk here. I'm going to go back to your 7. This John Heron is a trainer. I would actually encourage the listeners to pay attention to his horses. Look at his ROIs, routes, 347, dirt, 245. This guy can get it done. The one thing I would say is he usually is getting it done at big prices. That's why those ROIs are so large. You know, I was a little scared of him just because of claiming off of Broberg. Broberg knows what he's doing. So that kind of pushed me off that horse a little bit. But I do think people should pay attention to that trainer. But obviously, you got to go back as you did. You always got to start with looking at either the pace or the favorite. We'll start with the favorite here. You know, obviously can win. McPeak is, you know, winning at 19%. The massive drop on this horse. You know, they tried to get through, you know, this horse ran in the Derby last year, the Arkansas Derby last year, you know, but couldn't even get through. It's 1X. You know, you got to make the decision. Are they dumping or are they just trying to get the purse? They knew they were going to lose this horse. I'm with you at, you know, less than even money on a horse like this that's trending the wrong way. I was, you know, trying to beat this horse. But, you know, I don't have any major knocks like on the page. You know, it started off a layoff, mm-hmm. you know, trainer that knows how to win these route races, but I was kind of turned off by the price. You know, I mentioned that pace is important, you know, in the routes is less important than the sprints, but I'm going to kind of counteract myself a little bit here. I landed on the 4 Artwell. I thought this horse was going to be loose in this race, even though speed's not an advantage. But if you can get a horse that can be loose, it's still an advantage, even, you know, if the track's not playing forward in the route races. If you look at this horse's last race, he dueled. And so this horse dueled and, you know, ran poorly, you know, up the track, got, you know, with 7 feet, you know, almost 10 lengths. But this race had no speed outside of this 4. So my play was I was trying to get this horse to, you know, get have some courage up front, get brave as he's, you know, turning for home, not have anybody pressing him. I just thought that horse is going to be loose. So I played the number 4 Artwell to win. And then I saved the inexactas with the 1 and 2. The 2 being Lindsay Schultz, first off the claim. This horse, second off the layoff, but first in her barn. She does really well with these route horses and dirt horses with a positive ROI in both. She's training really well. I know her personally. She trains horse, has horses for us. I think she's a good up-and-coming young trainer. And, you know, she attracted Paco Lopez, who normally doesn't ride at Oakland, but we all know how aggressive Paco is. So, you know, seeing him show up there, you know, was a sign, I think.
Number 4, Artwell, top pick, along with the 1 and the 2 for my man Clay. I'm going to try and go with the 7 and the 5. We got a lot in this race. Let's see if one of them gets it done here right now.
Vairov, go Cats, blasts out of the outside post. He caught a perfect beginning, is up on the lead with Artwell. These two stride together on the front end. Hess runs in the third spot with Calrissian. Pando down on the inside, scraping paint as they charge into the turn. Dynamic Sun parked deep around the clubhouse turn. Magna Tap, he's running in the third last spot with DeLuca. And Interlock Empire, the gray, will attempt to do his best running later, takes his customary spot at the back of the field. Artwell takes a hold of the bit and leads the way by a length. Go Cats on a hold now is back in the second spot, tracking the pace. Pando a little bit eager behind the pace on the inside third. Hess is next with Calrissian there side by side. Dynamic Sun racing in midfield. He's five lengths off the lead down the back stretch, a length better than DeLuca. He's four clear of Magna Tap, who's second to last. Interlock Empire at the back with him joins him, passes Magna Tap with a half mile to go. Artwell still the leader here, approaching the turn a length in front. He went 23-4 for the first quarter, the half in 47-2, so no breathers for Artwell as he rounds the turn. Go Cats, Ricardo Santana Jr. getting to work aboard him. Calrissian, Walter De La Cruz asking him for more in the three path. Pando down on the inside, he's getting closer, he goes well. Pando's looking for a spot to go as they come to the top of the lane. He's going to get outside now. Pando come to split horses as they come down the lane. Pando, Paco Lopez riding this horse very confidently here, and he blew right by Artwell when Paco gave him the cue to go.
One, and it is Pando getting the job done. Paco winning by five here. Got a nice win mutual of 1160. And when we look back, and I think when I see Paco on a horse like this, and he's not one who usually goes at Oaklawn, I don't know if he had any other mounts on that day. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, he was in the grade one and yeah. Alpha Blossom, so that's why he was there.
Pando, by the way, 78, the winning buyer. I think that when you can get good jockeys in races down the card, yes, they're there for the grade one, yes, they're there for the bigger money, but this jockeys obviously want to race throughout the day, but when they kind of pick up one or two, I think it's always interesting. Pando getting the job done, and I think... Okay, claimed off for 30. Lindsay, like you said, first off the claim, gets the job done. Really good off these type of layoffs. They gave this horse some time. The main thing for me is Interlock Empire finishing off the board in fifth place. And when you can find these type of horses that can't even hit the board, I mean, if you we all had the right idea in here. I mean, you have Artwell running second, Pando. That's a 4-1, 7-1. I had a 9 and a 10-1 that didn't really fire all that well. But 69 for Calrissian coming right back. I mean, if it wasn't for Pando just running off the blocks, he was one buyer point away from Artwell in second. So I think if you take the winner out of this race, who won by a clear five, the rest of the field was pretty tight in conjecture for what the overall odds were in this race.
No, that's right. That's right.
And for you, I know you'd said Lindsay Schultz up and coming. Is this kind of the spot that you like to bet her the most in with these route races, or would you say she's better route rider than sprinting?
I think she's definitely better routing versus sprinting. She's had a lot of luck routing on the turf. She studied under Proctor, mm-hmm. but she's been better than I expected on the dirt with these route races. And, I had pretty good first off the claim numbers, 18%. But, you look at her dirt, she's got a point, win at 20%, 226 RI, and all routes, 226 RI with 19%. So she knows what she's doing.
I always tell people to do this as well. Obviously, when you're looking in the form, you see 1% for most everything. But if you go on Formulator, you can go into jockey and trainer stats, and they break it down route and sprint, dirt and turf. And there's plenty of times where at Saratoga, I'll find a guy who, might be 0-15 on turf, but he does so well on the dirt. And everyone, will play him on his turf races, and I'll just sit back and I'll wait for a dirt starter. Then he comes in, and sure, the percentage might not be the best, but I'm still going to hit that $7 or $8 horse more often. And if I'm passing on a horse on a turf race that I just know the guy has been cold as all get out on, and everyone else is playing him, to me, that's a winning angle in my book.
Absolutely.
Let's move on to the last race of the podcast. Race number 7, it's a maiden 12.5, 6 furlongs on the dirt. We know we are looking for speed in this race. I could not get away from without objection in this race. I also kind of thought Auto Dial was going to be the one way to go. Without objection, if you look back at the last race, the maiden 12.5 really blew up and came back in its own. 7.7 were the odds. Ends up running second. And then you get to Auto Dial. The last four or five races have all been low 70. Still can't get the job done. When I had seen how consistent Auto Dial had been, I kind of wanted to play without objection underneath. So I just made one quick exact in this race. I put Auto Dial on top, and I put without objection underneath. And I just thought if I can get this 1-2 here with a, you know, it's hard to say in the maiden race, but when you call them consistent, but this one had 5 seconds and 9 starts, and now they're putting the blinkers on again. I just wonder if this one might be a little bit interesting here. Put the favorite on top, try to find some value underneath. What about you, Clay?
So I agree with you that Auto Dial being very consistent, you know, running those 70s buyers, the owner's trying to win the owner's title. He's got a 1-race lead over Steve Asmussen, so a drop wouldn't necessarily bother me that much. I will point out that this horse tried maiden 10s last August and couldn't get it done, was a second, beat 3 lengths. So that was a little bit of potential red flag there. They're putting the blinkers on, another thing that kind of bothered me a touch. Hartman, you know, needs no introduction. You know, second time at this level made a lot of sense. I didn't bet this race, but the other horse I would like to talk about is the number 3, Corked. I know quite a bit. We bought this horse at the 2-year-old training sale for $100,000 last April. Actually had decently high hopes for this horse. We brought it to Oaklawn, ran second for a maiden 40. We thought we'd get claimed next time out, would run better, was with the track and couldn't get it done. Got beat, ran fourth, beat 7 lengths, and was claimed by Deodoro. But the one thing I think is interesting, and unfortunately most horse players aren't going to pick up on this, but as most of you know, Deodoro got ruled off for having that thyroid L, got Heisa ruled him off. So he had to leave Oaklawn, but he is continuing his career in Texas and Louisiana, which is, you know, are not Heisa states. So if you notice this horse, Court, our horse was training in Louisiana and not in Louisiana Downs. So, you know, it says in the PPs that Tim Martin, a 3% trainer, is training this horse. I guarantee you, this guy hadn't seen the horse until he walked in the paddock and put the saddle on. Deodoro was training this horse down in Louisiana Downs. So you effectively have a 20% trainer, not a 3% trainer. And you got the big drop from maiden 50 down to 12.5. You know, with Deodoro doing that, would you be a lot more likely to use this horse than with a 3% trainer? So I think that's a little disservice. I hate these paper trainer situations.
I think as well. And for me, a steadfast rule when I was beginning was just if it was under 5%, I'd let these, you know, trainers like this try and beat me if they were hitting it less than 5%. So Timothy Martin, 5 or 10 years ago for me, would be an automatic pass. Obviously, everyone knows I'm not going to get into a big, you know, ramble about Deodoro. Everyone knows the situation the sport's in with certain guys like this. It's unfortunate, but I just kind of feel going forward that, yeah, the paper trainer stuff kind of just sucks. I'm going to say I hope you're wrong, Clay, and that he wasn't training the worst, but we just got to see what it is with that. Like I had said, for me, I'm going to use Auto Dial without objection in an exacta. And your top pick in this race was again, Clay?
I didn't bet this race, so I didn't really have a strong opinion. I probably, it was a pass, but I probably would have gone with your 7 without objection.
Let's see who can break their maiden right now.
Fire off. Corked Ass for speed, Barrel Thief on the engine early, Cadillac Cowboy inside of that pair. These three tussle for the early lead. Cadillac Cowboy from the inside with a head lead on Corked. Barrel Thief taken back to third. Without objection, strides in fourth with Auto Dial, the two favorites, fourth and fifth down the back stretch. Dalton's Retro has to ease off of heels, had to tap on the brakes, in fact. Native Moonshine joining him, and a Deep Bourbon on Fire passes the aforementioned pair to be within 6 lengths of the lead into the turn. Statler has no early speed, well behind. As they round the fourth turn, Cadillac Cowboy in control with Cork. They're right together rounding the turn. Here comes Auto Dial with a four-wide sweep. Barrel Thief moving with him. Dalton Drutro going to be caught about five or six wide off the turn, is trying to gather momentum from there. At the top of the lane, Cadillac Cowboy has lost the lead. Corked under pressure in deep water now. Barrel Thief has come away with the lead without objection. Behind the leader is searching for racing room. Nowhere to go. He's trying to get inside. Auto Dial's there. Dalton's Retro. Cork is still in front. Barrel Thief has given way. Auto Dial on the outside in second, but Corked is fending them all off. Corked on the lead. Corked as game as the day is long. He won it.
And is Corked getting the job done? 61, the winning buyer, winning mutual of 1280. I sure would like 1280 if I knew the horse was trained by Robertino Diodoro, but c'est la vie at this. Auto Dial at under even money runs a 61 again. So I think if you want to play Auto Dial, you're almost at the point where he's almost unplayable because he's always going to be under 2-1. And he's had so many tries now. And these are the type of horses. Listen, I'm all for one that when you try to not play them on top, I obviously was trying to get an exacta home. Doesn't get done. They run second and third. But overall in this race, I think Corked, listen, slowly improved. 55, 60, 61 was shipped up from training in Louisiana. I mean, a lot of times people don't check that out when they see where the horse is training. They don't realize some horses are shipping up. I don't know how far of a ship that is, obviously, but obviously
it's not far. It's like an hour and a half. It's not far. Louisiana Downs is in North Louisiana.
So not the worst ship for a horse. Obviously could be much worse, but I think overall, when you look at this type of race, now Corked is off the maiden, but everyone else in this race, I think this is what makes these races kind of fun. You know, you have a 10-1 and a 29-1 that are, you know, 4 points off on the buyer speed figure. So in this race, kind of, I'm looking for the newbie when it comes down to these races next time out. I'm not looking to play a horse like without objection. Has every chance to win, but will probably end up hitting the board yet again. And I think Auto Dial for me is going to be that vulnerable favorite going forward.
Yeah, interesting thing, Auto Dial, you know, this was an obvious dump, you know, they're trying to get the win, and, you know, there was a bunch of people in on the claim for this horse, but it was voided, so obviously the horse wasn't doing good after the race, or something was off, so we'll be showing up for the same barn, same connections next time, so keep that in mind.
Let's talk real quick before I let you go, last thing, when we talk about how many people get in on claims, and, you know, for people who are new to the sport, all it is after the race, if people put in a slip before the race, they go. I've actually never seen one done. I think it would be kind of cool. Is it just like a bunch of dice go into a shaker? What exactly happens when we're looking to see who claims a horse after a race?
Yeah, it's a dice. They'll sign everyone a number, and you know, they'll do the dice and pull it out, and, you know, they'll match the slip with the number. You know, trying to be as fair as possible. The claim has to go in 15 minutes before the race. So, you know, you'll see people hanging out on the walkover trying to get a good look at the horse, you know, seeing how they're moving, et cetera. A lot of these, you'll notice in the paddock for claiming races, a lot of these trainers will have the horse walk over with all kinds of gear on, wraps and all kinds of stuff, trying to hide as much as they can. And then when they get in the paddock, they'll take all that off. So they're basically trying to put a costume on, trying to hide as many things as possible.
Can you think off the top of your head what the biggest claim was? Not money wise, but just like how many and if you won or not?
We won some 50 shakes at Saratoga. You'll get a lot of these obvious droppers where somebody's trying to win a race at Saratoga. It's similar to like this Auto Dial where you get a horse that's, you know, 20 or 30 point towers over, and they're making a big drop trying to, you know, win, you know, in front of their friends at Saratoga. You know, a lot of people don't realize, you know, the random fourth race, it's a $10,000 claimer at Saratoga. Your friends don't necessarily know the difference of that and the grade one, and they see you in the winner's circle. So you'll see people drop at Saratoga trying to get the win. Same at Oakland. But we won a couple of these 50 person shakes.
That's absolutely incredible. I feel like my luck, I wouldn't be able to win a two-person shake half of the time. But with that, I do want to thank my special guest, Clay Sanders. Clay, for people who don't know, is a co-owner with 10 Strike Racing. What do we got going on with the ownership, and what do we got going on in the next few weeks? Any more handicapping tournaments? Let me know.
Yeah, so we have a filly that won two Fridays ago when first out at Oaklawn, Almost Gone Rocket. She's an Into Mischief. She was actually entered 2 weeks prior, and if you can go back and watch the video, she went under the gate. I've never seen it before, like a cat. She got loose. Instead of breaking open the front of the gate, she went under and didn't hurt herself and ran off, which was kind of frustrating because we had partners come in 2 to 3 hours drive to see her run and had to be scratched. But she won last Friday, was a TDN Rising Star. She ran, I believe, an 84 buyer. She'll come back in an allowance race on Oaks Day, either at Oaklawn or Churchill, preferably Oaklawn if it'll go. It's a $140,000 spot. If she can clear that condition, we'll be looking at stakes. And if you're a dreamer, maybe it'll be a test type filly later in the year. So we're really excited about her. And from the handicapping tournament side, probably the next big one I'll be looking at is Churchill has Express Bet has a big Derby Day contest. So that'll be probably next on the docket.
Sounds fantastic, my man. Like I said, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Spencer. And good luck to everyone.
Thank you, everyone who listens to this podcast and the rest of the podcast on the In the Money Media Network. Also want to thank my special guest, Clay Sanders, for coming on and talking all things Oaklawn Park with myself. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's president is Peter Thomas Florentale. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. And our In the Money Media business manager is Drew Coatney. I'm Spencer Lugenbuehl. We will see you next time.